are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hooray! Delicious Volume 1, Life Tastes Good, is finally at Amazon, United States. What is delicious, you ask? Imagine a land where all your favorite foods live as human girls. Here in charming a la carte, under the floating city of heavenly delight, we meet Ramen, a young cook trying to run a restaurant with her family of pastas as they end up in all sorts of wacky adventures and hijinks as these strong, eccentric characters pursue their dreams and passions. Delicious is a beautifully drawn comedy series which is now finally available to buy in the United States. Click on the banner on One of Us, order today, and join in the fun now because Delicious Volume 2, Yum Yum Yum, is coming really soon. A perfect gift for your child or those of you who are forever young at heart. One of Us strongly recommends this one.
I don't want to set the world on fire.
Hello, Vault Dwellers. Welcome to Screener Squad. Today I've got Kim and Marco, and I'm Chad. We just got out of Vault 33 and kind of wanted to look at the wasteland here and see what it's all about, see if we can do good.
Where the rat roach is at.
Yeah, where my rat roaches at?
Boy, this is not what the brochure said it was going to be like.
I didn't get into Fallout until Fallout 3, which is probably about 15, 20 years ago now. The lore is so much older than that. This is a game that's been around since the early 90s, and it was a point-and-click, top-down adventure game that has now turned into, spawned probably about 8 different games and a bunch of comics and lore, and it's a mix between, you know, what happened after World War II if we dropped the bomb but then took that and said, hey, we're never going to drop this bomb on anyone ever again, but we're going to use this atomic energy to, you know, make our future. Like, that's basically the initial setup for the Fallout universe, is this alternate America where, yes, we still won the war, but communism's still out there. But we all agree that we probably shouldn't bomb the shit out of each other until we eventually do, because that's how we get to Fallout.
I was gonna say, somebody really described it really well. They're like, it's America's timeline up to World War II. And then what if Eisenhower had never warned us about the military-industrial complex, and we just dug in and basically we're living the 1950s for almost 100 years until, again, the bombs dropped and they managed to create all of this incredible technology like AI robots and laser and plasma weapons, but everything still feels like it's designed from the 1950s and 60s. It's that space age, Cold War era, and everything runs off of, like, you know, vacuum tubes. It's like steampunk, but with vacuum tubes. I don't know what you would call this genre, but to Chad's point, those games came out in 97, and I've played the first two games. That's where I fell in love with it. And I know we got to talk about this TV show, but goddamn, the thing that made Fallout stand out, even though it's gone through multiple titles and multiple game developers, they nailed that tone from the very first game. That particular weird world, which is sort of like Mad Max with, you know, Leave It to Beaver and the Jetsons and a little bit of Monty Python. And that has, I think, very successfully translated into this new Amazon series.
I really wanted to hear what the two gamers who have actually played the game thought about it before I kind of jumped in, because I came into this completely cold. I didn't know anything about the plot. I kind of signed up for it because I thought it was a cool billboard I saw about it. And I was like, okay, cool. Looks like some type of like space thing with like sentient zombies. That was what I thought I was getting myself into. It wasn't that at all, but that's what I thought it was. Watching the TV show, I felt like they had a lot of really, I think they did this intentionally to make it similar to the game, but did you guys notice a lot of like awkward pauses when characters would hear some new information or something would happen in front of them and they would pause as if, you know, that part of the game where it's like, do you want to do A, B, or C options? There were so many pauses like that, especially in the last episode, which is why the last episode felt so weak to me, because I was like, come on, just make your choice and let's go. Why are we pausing so much?
I mean, I love this, but also because I am familiar with the games, and it's had this very unique tone, which is very bleak and heartbreaking, but also kind of absurd and hilarious and ultra violent. And you're constantly having to make these moral decisions. Kim is right in that they are often faced with like, oh, I could do this, but something bad's going to happen. Or I have to do something terrible in order for something good to happen. And usually you're playing the vault dweller who's going out in this world for the first time. But I think it was really smart. They kind of did very obvious allusion to Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where they had three leads, and you know their storylines are going to converge. It's Lucy, the vault dweller, who's trying to find her kidnapped father. It's Maximus, who's a member of the Brother of Steel, who wants to become a knight. And it's this ghoul bounty hunter that we find out, you know, has survived over 200 years, right out and actually existed before the bombs dropped. And all three of them are chasing this MacGuffin, this guy from the Enclave who has this piece of tech that everyone in the wasteland wants. And you know, when those people meet, like I said, it's the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And those names are relative. Lucy's good, but she has to do bad things. Maximus wants to be good, but also does horrible things. And likewise, the ghoul is on the surface completely amoral and horrible, but you also see the journey that he went through to become a good man, to become this wasteland ghoul with really just no scruples whatsoever in order to survive.
Each of those characters represents kind of like basic archetypes on how you can play Fallout. I play as a Lucy. Any Fallout game, any open world game where I get to choose what I want to do, I'm always going to try to do the right thing. And that's what Lucy is. Maximus, like you said, he wants to be good, but he does bad things, which is a way you can play in the game. And also, you can also just be a raging dick, like a ghoul, and you can hurt everybody. You can be mean to everybody. You can steal, whatever. It all depends on your flavor of play. So I liked how it kind of covered all bases of, you know, at least in the realm of this universe, the morality. Because Lucy does have to do bad things in order for her to achieve what she wants. And she does it with such a bubbly personality. And you later find out why. In the Fallout lore, there's these vaults that Vault Tech made. And it's like, hey, when the bombs drop, go to your vault. You're going to live there. And this is in the game too. But in the show, you see that Vault Tech has ulterior motives. It's basically like signing up with Google. Hey, yeah, we'll give you this product, but also we're going to like experiment and sell your data and blah, blah, blah.
You are the product.
When you go into a vault, you didn't know what kind of vault you were going into, but all of them were different experiments. At one point in the show, we see a vault. At first, we think they're vault dwellers, but really, it's just mostly surface people that are living in a vault and have kind of taken it over, which happens again in the game. There's 121 vaults, I think.
Yeah, they're all over the place. And, you know, it was basically, as somebody points out, it's like it's just a bunch of place for rich people to hole up in the event of a nuclear catastrophe, whereas everyone on the surface was either allowed to die and the survivors just had to scrap whatever they could to save themselves in this horrible wasteland. And usually that means kind of just society breaking down. But we also see society being built up. There's new cities, there's new developments, which is an eye-opening thing for Lucy, who spent her entire life thinking that when they come up, you know, they're going to rebuild America. The social commentary of Fallout, you know, has always been like America is jingoistic. It's stuck in the 1950s. We're just really full of ourselves with our might and technological know-how, and we're xenophobic and paranoid. And as we go through the games, we realize, oh, shit, you know, that's how we got ourselves killed. And the thing that this this series does really well is they go flashback in time where we get to see life before the vaults, and we get to learn that, you know, oh, we actually get to see more of the shenanigans going behind the scenes with Vault-Tec, and not just Vault-Tec, but all the other companies that they work with that you're going to see throughout all of these games, like Repcon and Robco, you know, and Nuka-Cola, and like all of these assholes basically were kind of counting on a nuclear war because, hey, it's all about profit. And if somebody complains about this being like, you know, anti-capitalist or whatever, I'm like, man, those games have been out since 1997. And if you haven't picked up on the social commentary since then, I mean, yeah, you can just have fun running around shooting things without thinking about it, but you can't say it was never there from the beginning. And I appreciate that they lean really hard into that and really open up the backstory into the world of Fallout.
Completely agree. I think the flashbacks to the, I guess, modern day of the show or past were some of the best parts, especially the way they would drop in little kind of surprises along the way. And the past really influenced the current storyline in a way that I thought was woven together so well. And it kept me guessing over, you know, where the story was going, even though we see the outcome. And kind of talking a little bit more about the flashbacks. So the ghoul, before he was the ghoul, he was a famous Hollywood like cowboy actor. And he was married to this woman and they had a child together. And I really enjoyed seeing their family dynamic because as the show goes on, he starts to mistrust his wife more and more. And his wife works for Vault-Tec and she got him looped into advertising for Vault-Tec back in the day. So now in the present time, whenever he sees like anything that has to do with Vault-Tec, it just makes him furious. I just thought that was a funny kind of link between the two times.
Yeah. Casting Walter Goggins in that was a masterstroke.
I've never seen him in a role like this.
Yeah. And the way
he's usually goofy.
Yeah. And Kim's right. The way it ties into his past. At first, he seems just like a badass, you know, gunslinger. And you realize the tragedy of his past. And the way it ties in, and like Kim, I really enjoyed that connective material to the pre-apocalypse stuff. And maybe that's the stuff that Chad's neighbor didn't enjoy, because that's what a lot of the back half of this is really delving into the backstory.
Well, how did you guys feel about the having to take an item from point A to point B? That was the main driving force for the characters in this story. Did you enjoy that?
I mean, it's just like the game.
Oh, okay. Like, that makes sense.
Looking at your Pip-Boy, like, hey, can you take this severed head to the north and collect some caps and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's...
It is the game.
That's straight out of the game.
They did such a great job of translating the game mechanics without making it like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, kind of like fan service. It's like, look, if you've ever played these games, you can pick up a lot of shit. You can scrounge a lot of shit. I'm a loot goblin. And when they
offended that Lucy didn't pick up more on her journey.
But when I have playable characters that I bring with me, I don't really need them for their skills. I just use them to haul my shit. They're like, how much can you carry? 250 pounds? You're carrying all my shit. But in the game, you never see how they magic. No matter how big they are, you just give them 200, 250 pounds of crap. But their character model never changes. It doesn't make any sense. Here, you actually see, because Maximus starts off as a squire to a knight of the Brotherhood of Steel, and you see these enormous fucking inventory bags. It's like the world's biggest golf bag / duffel bag. And I'm like, yes, that is exactly what would be happening. And I love all those things that happen. Chad's right. It is very much like the game. I don't know how Kim felt about it, because she's not familiar with it. But those mechanics, you're like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what it is. But it actually has a story point. Like at one point, the ghoul is trying to get something with Lucy and they realize we can't do this. We actually have to go get this other thing first. And he says a line that I think just defines the Fallout experience, which is like, that's the golden rule of the wasteland. Thou shalt always get sidetracked by bullshit. And that's true.
By bullshit. Yeah.
Thou shalt always get sidetracked by stupid bullshit. And that is exactly like, oh, you wanted to do this? Well, guess what? You actually have to do this other thing now before you can do the thing you started off to do. I mean, like I said, I'm a longtime fan of this particular franchise. I'm not much of a gamer at all. And most people who know me know that. But Fallout is one of those series that from the very first installment just hooked me because they got the world right. Even in those old sort of primitive 1997 era graphics, you could really see the kind of world building that they were going for and that particular tone, which is very often difficult to capture in an adaptation. But I think this particular series did that perfectly. On that level, this is as authentic an experience of Fallout as you could get. Do I have some quibbles? Yes. But some of which could be explained away in the second season. At least one or two, which happened in the very first episode. And as we're watching it, we just accept it on face value. It's not until the end where I'm like, wait a minute. For that very inciting incident could have been avoided, but then I guess we wouldn't have a fucking TV show. So... shut up, nerd, and just accept this because you're having a good time. And I had a great time. The only way this could feel more authentic to the Fallout experience is if it's just started glitching and your characters started clipping through the furniture. Because those games are notoriously buggy. I mean, even to this day, they're very buggy. But people still play them and love them because they really like that world. And it was a really smart idea to create a new story within these existing timeline rather than trying to adapt the game itself. I can't wait to get more of this. I hope it'll be as good as this one was. They had years to develop it. I imagine now that Amazon is showing up at their door with a dump truck full of money going, yes, give us more. Suddenly they're going to have a lot less time to do that second season. And I hope they'll be able to get over that sophomore slump and match it or even exceed this first series. I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 strips of fresh ass jerky.
I'm going to slightly disagree on one point that Marco made in his final thoughts, which is the world building. I think they succeeded in setting the tone and, you know, building, making the world look good, but it felt really, really small to me. And it felt small because the characters were running into each other every 2 minutes. Like, what are y'all in, like, one small town? I thought we were, you know, we were going to be seeing more of the country, more of the U.S., more of this world. But really, it just felt like they were all in like, Austin, and they kept running into each other on 6th Street or something. I really didn't like that part about it. Like, oh, I need to go find this person. Oh, there he is. He's right there.
If I had a nickel for every time I had to cut a dude's head off on 6th Street.
So that was my main gripe of the world building part of it. Hopefully with season 2, they'll have more money. They can expand a little bit. As far as the characters go, I actually did get really endeared to the main girl, Lucy, after a couple episodes. Her just charm grew on me. Initially, I was a little bit annoyed with it. I was like, why are you so happy? The world has ended. But as the show went on, I really started to like her, especially her scenes with Maximus. I thought they had great chemistry together. And whenever they were together, that was when they were best, because they handled the heavy moments well together. And then they handled the lighter, more comedic moments really, really well together. Like the comedic timing with them, especially on Maximus's part. There's a scene where he gets he's in a place where he has a bit of comfort that he's never had before in his life. And he was really living it up. And I love that for him. And watching it was hilarious. That was literally one of my favorite scenes in one of my favorite episodes. But like I was saying earlier, the first 2 episodes for me were not that great. And then the last episode, I know they wanted to leave us wanting more, but what it left me was, it left me feeling like frustrated. Like you left me wanting too much more. That's, I think, the best way I can say without spoiling anything. So hopefully when they come back in season 2, they have more money, they can make the world bigger, they can really just fill in a lot of like loose threads that they left. And I know they left them intentionally to make you want to come back, but they left too many threads for me, for my liking. So I'm going to give this one, I think I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 fallen off noses.
For me, I guess one of my biggest complaints was CG. A few times where it looked like some really good practical sets were made. And then, you know, we save money on making the vault door digital. It's just so much easier to spot now. And maybe it's just the way films are made and I'm just being picky. But either way, I still enjoyed it. I think it definitely, going into this cold, Kim, kind of does you a disservice, because knowing some of the backstory kind of helps you fill in the gaps. But then again, I complain as a viewer of content where I get thrown into some universe that I'm supposed to know all the lore of, and they glaze over character development or whatever, and then I get all pissy about it. Not that you were being pissy about this. I'm just saying.
I don't think that's a good excuse.
Well, I can see, like, there's definitely big gaps that can easily be filled if you, you know, had a Fallout 101 course under your belt. The series needs to be better on that, like trying to cultivate and retain new viewers. Either way, I had a good time with it. Really makes me want to pull out Fallout 4 again and just restart my game and go from there. But I'm going to say 8.5 out of 10 Rataways. Soundtrack for this, Kim, all those songs were from either Fallout 3 or Fallout 4.
There was nothing, I can't think of any scenes that had music that enhanced the scene for me.
Again,
I can think of all the scenes.
but again, that's always been there right from the very first game. It's like this horrible future, but it's all this cheery sort of, you know, pretty pop tunes from the ancient past. That to me has always been like that weird 1950s America that, you know, we wanted to preserve, that we thought was like the height of culture. And I love that, in that really it's always kind of confusing, because you find out that it actually, the bombs started falling in 2077, which is almost, you know, 100 years after World War II. So basically after World War II, we were kind of stuck in the 1950s and early 60s for about 100 years. And it's like, once the corporations took over, culture stopped. It's like nobody made any new music or anything cool anymore. It was just like nothing really developed. They were just frozen in time and refused to move forward, except unless it was like either to make money or to like improve products and technology. So I kind of like the old timey music and the needle drops. But as to Chad's point, a lot of it, with very few exceptions, almost all of it has already appeared in the games before. And I think they work great. But to Kim's point, if you're not familiar with the games, you might not. That might just seem like an odd choice.
I don't want to set the world on fire. Let me hear it one more time.
I think I'll stay where I am. Civilization.